In a world where there are people, lots and lots of people, and some very, very diverse people, but they're marginalized and not represented well, that's what we're here to talk about here.
On the Prop History Podcast. Hello, my name is Mike.
I'm Greg.
And this, as I just said, is the Prop History Podcast. That was actually one of your nicest intros you've ever done.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, not a problem. And on this podcast, ostensibly, we talk about props and film history and occasionally whatever it is we get off on a tangent on.
We always get off on a tangent.
So today, we are actually joined by a guest.
Yay!
We have a guest. It is my dear friend, Billy B of TikTok fame. Also,
the Billy B?
The Billy B.
Oh, my God. How did you wrangle that?
She's a friend of mine.
You're awesome.
No, Billy is. But Billy B, if you are unaware of who she is one of my colleagues on TikTok. She is known colloquially as the Pyrex Lady. So, Billy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes. I just want to address really quick that you think that other people on TikTok are your colleagues.
Well, it seemed like the best title at the time.
I'm with you, but... It's not like you go into the same office and
right.
It's like, oh, hey, how you doing? You can have coffee later after you post your TikTok.
At the TikTok cubicles. Yeah. She's on the other side.
I do, though.
Right?
I kind of do. Like, we'll check in during the day, like, hey, man, how are you? Cool, awesome, great.
Yeah.
Like, 6 hours go by.
Yeah. That sounds like...
Great, awesome.
You're making TikTok seem like too much work.
I want a cubicle next to the chick from England who tests all the food.
That tries all the different American food.
I love her because she's obsessed with American ranch.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I just think that that's the cutest thing I've ever seen because I'm like, she's more American than I am.
Yeah,
I'm
ranch is disgusting.
I'm not a ranch fan, but she's all about it. And I'm like, you know what? More power to you. Yeah. That's what gets you through the day.
I think it's funny that people that are like, oh, you're really American, just doing a bad British accent. I'm like... All right, let me see one of your outlets in your house. Just take your phone and show me an outlet, and I can tell you if she's British or not. Yep, she's British.
Yep, or the sink.
Or the sink.
Yeah, because they have a faucet for cold water and a faucet for hot water.
Or the fact that the washing machine is in the kitchen.
Right.
So yeah.
They're also really not good at making cheeseburgers.
No. You know what they're also not good at is nachos. So
this has suddenly turned into Take a Shit on Britain podcast.
No, but the first time I was ever in England... The first time I was ever in England, like, it was like day 15 or something, and I was fucking sick and tired of fish and chips, and we were at this pub and nachos were on the menu, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna have fucking nachos because I'm in England. And it was like somebody had gone to the United States and had nachos and called home and said, I just had this concoction of chips and cheese and salsa. And that person told somebody else who told somebody else who eventually told the owner of this pub who told the chef to make this. And that's what the nachos were like.
It was like the worst culinary version of telephone.
Yeah,
ever.
Yeah, it was
nachos
it was
designed
bad.
By committee.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
No, thank you. That's okay.
But anyhow, back to Billy B.
So, but real quick, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Billy. We now that we've thoroughly thrashed the British, let's talk about our sponsor, Prop Store of London.
They're awesome, though.
We are sponsored by Prop Store of London, and Prop Store of California for all of your propping and film memorabilia needs. You can find out more at propstore.com and propstore.uk. I'm very sorry, Stephen, that we just did all of that trash talking about England.
They have a great new auction coming up in a couple of months that we'll get to talk more about in an upcoming episode.
But since we're wasting Billy's time.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's all me.
Billy?
No, you're not.
Oh, yes, give it time. So we actually asked you to be on this podcast to talk about diversity in film in a way, largely about how folks with disabilities are portrayed, and you specifically brought up 1932's Freaks, and you said that that was how it was done right. Can you explain both the background of the movie and how they were portrayed correctly versus how they haven't been?
Sure. Yeah. So 1932, what they called back then a soundie. I'm sure you all know, but I'm not sure if listeners know. It was the premier sound visual experience for people. Up until that point, most movies had been silent. And 1932's Freaks by Todd Browning was one of the first soundies that took advantage of mass audience participation Mm-hmm. He had the year prior released Dracula to huge success. So people went, oh, Todd Browning, yeah, 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 let's go see this new movie. Well, what nobody was really ready for is Todd Browning's extreme love of the sideshow and traveling circuses in particular. So Freaks is a rendition on a screenplay and short story called Spurs by another man named Todd Robbins. He had written it in 19, or he had released it in 1923. And the story is the same in both up until a point. Todd Robbins' story is pretty much, you know, marginalized person, has a lot of money, able-bodied person, sees that this person has a lot of money, fakes being in love with them in an attempt to swindle this person out of their inheritance. Things go wrong for able-bodied person. A wager is made, it doesn't end well for her, blah, blah, blah. Todd Browning took it up a notch, and he incorporated his love for sideshow in this, and the story goes, there are two lovely, proportional little people named Hans and Frida in a sideshow, and they are looking around for new acts, and a new act comes along. Her name's Cleopatra. She's a beautiful, high-wire walker, and Hans, who's pretty in love with Frida, turns his attentions to Cleopatra instead. Says that she's the prettiest, most beautiful big woman he's ever seen. Well, Cleopatra is most definitely a grifter. While she does have one talent, most of her talents go back to swindling people out of their cash. Her love is Hercules, and he is the strong man of the sideshow. And they come up with an idea to swindle Hans out of his inheritance. So she tricks Hans into believing that she's in love with him, and the other sideshow performers, everything from, if you're familiar with Schlitzie, the Pinhead, all the way to Violet and Daisy Hilton, Josephine Joseph is in it as well. They all find out about Cleopatra's terrible idea. Of course, Hans is heartbroken, but Frida's there to, you know, wrap his heart up in love. And then they all pretty much massacre Cleopatra almost to death and turn her into a freak, which is, you should watch the movie, the unedited version. It's on YouTube. It's a good time.
I have seen it.
Turn her into a duck lady,
mm-hmm.
And kind of turn the tables on her. So that's just a slight overview. This is the first time in a long time that people who were marginalized in this way had been put on, like, in the spotlight and treated on film, not just as oddities to be looked upon for entertainment in a bad way. They were kind of treated like royalty, especially on set. They were treated very well. They were paid very handsomely. And they had a pretty good time. There are tons of stories that come out of it saying it was a camaraderie that was not experienced in Hollywood at the time. But when people came to see the movie, specifically, of course, able-bodied people, instead of it being a kind of horror but inspiring story about, you know, how love triumphs over evil, able-bodied people got really pissed. And Todd Browning was not ready. He was like, wait, whoa, you love Dracula. Why are y'all upset? And what it comes down to is that the othered people, little people, people with, you know, chromosomal deformities, quote unquote, all of a sudden had the upper hand. And here's a movie literally going, able-bodied people are evil. Here's how. And making people who 20, 30, 40 years ago had been seen in P.T. Barnum sideshows as being lower class in a caste system to be looked down upon and pitied. Now you've got characters like Hans, who are richer than everybody and own property and are managers of people, getting revenge on able-bodied people who had forced them into these horrible systems to begin with. And it made, I said this in one of my podcasts, I was like, it made able-bodied people feel a certain way and go, eh. Like, it just made them so uncomfortable that now all of a sudden Todd Browning kind of dropped off the face of the earth. He never had another huge hit after that.
So, I'm curious, like, because I'm listening to this, I haven't seen this yet, but like all the images flooding into my brain are from American Horror Stories Freak Show. And I'm curious how you feel like the two juxtapose or work or with each other or work against each other.
So funny you bring that up. If anybody wants to head over to TikTok, I go on a like seven video rant about American Horror Story. So my partner, Trick the Bastard, and I are both sideshow performers. I used to be what we call a natural born. I was born with a physical condition that made me look different than everybody else. And then I had a back surgery when I was 17, and now I kind of look like everyone else. You wouldn't know that there was anything quote unquote wrong with me just by looking at me. So I am in this weird gray area where I straddle a line. I've been through both, and I will tell you what, watching American Horror Story Freak Show was an extremely liberating yet terrifying experience. Also exciting because a lot of our friends are in it. so that was weird.
Yeah, I only started watching it because of Naomi Grossman. I got to work with her at a con, and I'm
Naomi
like,
Naomi Grossman's one of the nicest people on earth.
Right?
I just want to say that right now. Naomi Grossman is one of the sweetest, kindest, nicest, easy to get along with humans on the face of the earth, and she is like kind of just cordial buddies with a couple of our oddities dealers in Philadelphia that run Anastasia's Antiques, and they have got umpteen signed posters of her just hanging around. And she just comes to Philly and she's like, oh, you want me to sign that? Okay, cool. And she just like, she does not care.
Yeah, like when I was working with her, I collect autographs. I have thousands of autographs. I love autographs.
He really does.
And it never occurred to me to get her autograph because all I knew is she was this cute girl. Well, woman, whatever. My mom yells at me for using that word. But, you know, this like cute woman who like was super sweet. And then I'm like, oh, I should watch that show she does. And then I fell in love. So,
yeah. So, yeah, American Horror Story has kind of, I'm kind of irritated by it, as well as enamored with it. And there's a couple of reasons why. It kind of literally falls into what we're talking about right now. So it takes on this life of its own, talking about the sideshow in a way that maybe hasn't really been seen before. And I often get a lot of people who go, oh, well, that was just a show. A lot of that stuff never happened. And I have to stop them and go, I hope you realize that 99% of everything that occurred in that show did happen to people while they were in the sideshow. They were horrifically treated. Just like garbage. And that it's normal. People were like, well, not murder. I'm like, are you kidding? I was like, tons of people got murdered. How do you think the oddities market survived in the museum sphere?
Mm-hmm.
And then people get horrified. I'm like, good, glad. I'm so glad you're upset right now, because now you know how I feel. But there was a huge issue with that because one of the lead characters, he plays a character with ectrodactyly. And it's great that American Horror Story runs off of it being, I guess, contextualized as a work that has the same actors in every season. You got to kind of work in your stars and make them part of the show. And while AHS, you know, Freak Show definitely took, I would say, good care of getting as many natural born people in the show as possible, having your lead character made up to look like he is ectrodactyly, when we have people like Black Scorpion who are known actors and do have ectrodactyly, it kind of it rubbed us all the wrong way. I was like,
Billy,
could you
explain for folks who may not know what ectrodactyly is? What is that?
Sure. So ectrodactyly is what is called a defect. I don't see anything as defect, but it is a birth condition in which the digits on the hand are either fused together or altogether missing. So if somebody with ectrodactyly, their x-rays would look kind of like what we call in the sideshow Lobster Boy. Mm-hmm. So Grady Stiles had ectrodactyly, if you want to look him up. And instead of having digits that were fused, he just had two digits on each hand altogether. Ectrodactyly can also, in progressive cases, affect the feet and overall limbs. They tend to be shorter, and sometimes the feet do not form, or if they do, it is with one digit bone instead of five.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. How do you feel like Evan Peters did as far as portraying that, though?
Evan Peters does his due diligence. Everyone in AHS does their due diligence. I will give them that. They are very, at least the actors, because Naomi Grossman, same thing. Naomi Grossman plays a pinhead. And she was very, very cautious about taking that role and making sure that she didn't insult anybody and did, you know, the right, did everything the right way. Yeah. In trying to make sure that she wasn't further creating discord within a community that she doesn't belong to. Evan Peters did his job. I'll say that. He did his job. He did his research and he did his job. My issue is not with the actors themselves. My issue is, by and large, the producers and directors of things that do take on sideshow subject matter and don't give the people whose histories are literally impacted by this the time of day. A mm-hmm. Good example is, I can't, oh boy, this will open a can of worms, but any show, movie, blah, blah, blah about P.T. Barnum, i.e. The Greatest Showman, makes me want to throw things.
So us here at the Prop History Podcast, I believe I can speak for both Greg and myself when I say that we firmly believe that P.T. Barnum was a bastard.
Yes.
Oh, piece of shit.
I don't care how good the music The Greatest Showman has. I refuse to watch it because he's a piece of shit. Like, I cannot disconnect who he was in real life to whoever Hugh Jackman is playing. Like, I just refuse.
Oh. It's also, not just that. I'm sorry, continue.
That's all right. P.T. Barnum also didn't look like Hugh Jackman.
No. So.
No, God, no, Jesus, no.
He looked like W.C. Fields.
That one thing straight. He did not look like Hugh Jackman. Also, I hate Hugh Jackman. I will say that to his face.
Wow.
If I ever meet him, I will walk up directly to his face and be like, you're a piece of shit, and I'll walk away, and I don't care. Because he had a bunch of actors hired and then doctored up to look like sideshow performers who exist today, right now. Uh-huh. Who they could have hired. I have, there is a acquaintance of mine named Little Bear. Mm-hmm. She is an amazing sideshow performer. She is a bearded lady. She is also a classically trained opera singer and wanted to audition, and they told her no. And I was like, why? You literally have a classically trained opera singer who knows how to act, ready
now,
to do the thing.
Now, were the casting decisions, were they made by Hugh Jackman?
He helped. He sat there in casting and, like, chose people.
Oh, goodness.
And, oh, yeah. Oh, it gets so much worse. You don't even know. Like, he helped with the, like, lyrical composition of the song This Is Me. And, like, does all this, like, uplifting, amazing stuff with none of the people he's talking about in the room. Huh. I'm like, sir, you just painted two people, like, pasty white and gave them terrible wigs and then told everybody that they're supposed to be albino people. Are you kidding me? When you have a billion actual models that work for Vogue who do have albinism and know how to act and look pretty on screen, and you were like, nah, I'll pay some person who has, like, a paint sprayer $1,000 a day just to not hire marginalized people. And I'm sitting here like, I'll punch them all in the face.
Are you familiar with Crispin Glover's film, It's Fine, Everything's Fine?
I'm guessing yes.
Yes.
I saw that at a screening that Crispin Glover did, and I'm still to this day not entirely sure how I feel about it, and maybe a little bit emotionally traumatized.
I don't even want to get into that. I will.
So I have a.
I was gonna say, let's talk about what's eating Gilbert Grape.
I was gonna ask if you could give an example of a movie that portrayed people with disabilities, if that's the correct term. I'm sorry if that's not the correct term.
Oh, no, it's totally the correct term. Okay. Anybody who is marginalized and their daily life is affected by something that they cannot control is either an issue of them being, you know, a person of color or disabled in some way.
Fair enough.
So disability is not something to be ashamed of. I get a lot of people, I am disabled myself. I'm not just a natural born who's now upright. I'm also physically disabled and autistic. So
hey, I'm autistic too.
Damn it.
Well, what I was going to ask was if you gave an example of at least two examples of where people with disabilities were portrayed correctly. I was going to ask if you had an example where they weren't, and you just did. And
yeah, What's Eating Gilbert Grape makes me. Everybody's like, oh, Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm like, Leonardo DiCaprio can fall off a bridge. I do not care.
Right. Now. Mm-hmm. Have you, in your opinion, has the portrayal of those with disabilities gotten better recently, or is it worse. Or is it still just they're continuing to drag them through the mud over and over again?
It's almost worse.
Really?
It's almost worse. We have pockets. We have pockets where people wake up and make an effort because it's trendy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of this show. I think it was on either Netflix or Fox or something, and they did a great job of making sure that they hired an actress who actually had autism to portray her character who has autism properly, and she has full rights to be like, I would never say this, I would never do this, and they get that. But that's because the vocal, I guess, reach of disabilities right now is trendy. It's trendy to talk about being disabled. It's trendy to advocate for disability. But when it gets down to it, a lot of people don't want to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds good to them, but they don't actually want to do what it takes, because when they enter the world of what it's actually like to be disabled, it is scary. I mean, imagine going through life feeling perfectly fine, and all of a sudden you have to be confronted with the fact that your neighbor cannot move through the world the same way you do.
Right.
It's scary. And that's honestly what happened with Todd Browning's Freaks. All of a sudden people were confronted with, oh my God, this stuff happens. And it scares the living crap out of them. So have people done a little bit better in pockets, but I'm waiting for it to die down again, because this happens every 10 years or so. Talk about it. People love it. Then people start to misuse it. Then it gets ugly and then it dies down again.
So a couple of years ago, I've really come to terms with the fact that I'm autistic. When I was a kid, I was diagnosed with ADD, and through conversations with the doctor that diagnosed my son for being autistic and conversations with my mom, I've really come to terms with the fact that as a kid, I should have been diagnosed with autism, but you know, I'm 48 years old and that just didn't exist in the early 70s. You know, it's been interesting the last couple of years, especially, you know, seeing shows like Atypical on Netflix, you know, really dealing with autism and me getting to find ways to relate with what I've experienced my entire life and getting to see that on screen with autistic actors. And
we also, the history has a tremendously terrible track record of misrepresenting people.
Oh, yeah.
Constantly. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes folks that are disabled are used more or less as a plot point.
Right. Like Rain Man. Like I am not Rain Man. I mean, I have my moments, don't get me wrong, but I am not Raymond Babbitt most of the time. And so when, you know, like, and you said that you're autistic as well, like I'm sure that, you know, you present normal, you know, you present neurotypical, and then, you know, people don't see you as being Raymond Babbitt, and therefore you can't be autistic because you're not that, because that's the only experience they have with autism in any big scheme, is that.
And unfortunately, Hollywood's portrayal of a thing largely becomes the stereotype of a thing, too.
Right.
Because, oh, yeah, people all the time ask me if I can remember large swaths of information, or if I'm good at math, or things like that. And I'm like, why? First off, I failed algebra 3 times in college. I'm going to need you to like, shh. I can't do math. And I was like, I know a lot about stuff I'm interested in, and that is about it.
Right.
And I'm like, I am interested in history and logistics. After that, miss me with that shit. I know nothing. Like I just, and that's fine. And I'm okay saying that, but unfortunately, autism in particular has a horrific track record of being presented because we are either presented as being completely incapable of doing anything ever and infantilized to the nth degree, or we are seen as being geniuses that should be regarded like Leonardo da Vinci. And if we fall outside of those two boxes, we are automatically seen as either faking it or outliers. Mm-hmm. And people get upset with that because you are forcing them to realign what they know about the world. And people do not like to be surprised. So when you surprise them with stuff, it shocks their system. And instead of going, hey, that was messed up of me to say, they freak out and they flee. And then you never see them again. And that's like the story of my entire life.
Right.
And I didn't know anything until I was 27. It literally went a little something like, yeah, that's super weird. I do that all the time. And then my friend, who is a board certified psychiatrist, looks at me and goes, well, yeah, that's because you're autistic. And I went, I'm what? She goes, oh my God, you didn't know. I was like, no, I did not know. What are you saying to me? And she's like, you're autistic. You didn't know you didn't know this?
Oh, yeah, no. That's like what I went through.
I didn't.
When we're sitting there, you know, with this doctor, and they're saying, okay, you know, this is a sign, and this is a sign, and this is a tick, and this is a thing. And the entire time, my wife's looking at me going, that's you, that's you, that's you, that's you. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Literally, like, you know, textures and fabrics and stuff. I wear blue jeans, a t-shirt, and a flannel shirt 7 days a week. And
Can confirm.
Yeah. So I did this competition over the weekend, and before, if the winner of the competition goes on to another round, and before it started, I'm like, hey, if we win, can you tell me what color shirt we're going to have so I can wear flannel to match? But when I was like 2 years old, I crawled underneath my sister's baby thing because I didn't want to wear the shirt because it itched me and I didn't like it. My mom yanked me out, and I ended up having to have stitches because my ear got caught. But like, I have been that way my entire life. And mom's like, oh yeah, we had to cut your tags out, wash the shirts, and we could only buy certain, you know, things. And like, to this day at 48 years old, I will not wear a polo because those are just gross.
Yeah, do you ever flip your socks inside out so you don't have to feel the seam on your toes?
Sometimes, but the bigger thing for me is like, I can't do mismatched socks because if the socks feel differently,
Hang on.
Yep, if socks feel differently, it's not good.
That's, my wife does that.
Where's mismatched socks?
No. She can't wear mismatched socks.
Yeah, no.
She just can't
do it.
Well,
I mean, I can't really say much. I was about to say, neither can Ian. My partner, but then again, he is also on the spectrum. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not helping. I'm not helping. But yeah, I mean, it's people don't understand that they get stuck in this kind of black and white idea of what it is to be disabled, and I don't think they realize the absolute magnitude of what it is. It also doesn't help that things like, you know, autism or like chronic migraine disorders or seizures or vascular disorders, these are all invisible.
Right.
So trying to get accommodations for invisible illnesses is horrible because you're in this loop of people being like, well, you're successful, so you don't need help. It's like, I am successful because I am killing myself to be that way, to conform to what you need, and I just need some help. Then you got the other side of it with people who are physically disabled in a way that is visual and need aids such as ramps. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, part of hearing is technically invisible until it's not. I need subtitles. I need this, that, and the other. And then all of a sudden it becomes a huge problem. And people just are unwilling to bend because in their mind, and I don't care who you are, and if anybody says no to this, they're lying. People, able-bodied people in general, have this idea in their head that disabled people are going to get better. They can't just take people for how they are right now. And I know this because even some disability advocates I've spoken to, specifically in my instance, last job I worked that I left because I was being horribly abused 24/7. I was explaining to my boss, I was like, hey, this system isn't working for me. Can we work something out to make this a little less stressful on me? I'm not understanding what you need me to do when you present it this way. Her response was just shoot back at me. She's like, oh, you'll get used to it eventually. It'll be fine. And I'm like, my brain does not work that way. And she just couldn't do it. And like, when I would, like, I go blind with my migraines, so I'd explain to her sometimes like, hey, I'm having trouble working today. I can't see. Mm-hmm. And she'd be like, oh, just lay down for a few minutes, you know, was like, well, it doesn't work like that. I was like, I'd love to tell you to like that I can just do that. She's like, oh, take your meds, it'll be fine. I'm like, it doesn't work like that.
Right.
Because when able-bodied people get a headache, they pop an ibuprofen and they're good to go. It's like, no, baby, this is my life. Like, forever.
So real quick, I'm sorry.
Never change.
I'm sorry, Billy. Now, the portrayal of, you were speaking about the portrayal of autism in film. Has there ever been an instance where you watched a film and you felt that that autism was portrayed correctly? Or has it always been that one end of the spectrum or another?
It's always been used as a plot point. And it's always been used as, oh, my quirky, really educated friend.
Mm-hmm. And never,
it's that person over there is autistic and they're nonverbal and they lash out and they're a troublemaker. You got to keep an eye on them. Right. Never how it actually is. And it's been very frustrating because you did make a point. Yeah, it's a plot point. Some people, they can't just portray the world how it is.
Right.
It's very idealized. And like I said, people don't like to be confronted with something that feels unfamiliar to them. That's why we have such a big issue with marginalized people when it comes to skin color.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid you be a few shades darker than, you know, Jennifer Hudson. And like now all of a sudden, oh, a dark skinned black woman having a role in something. I can't do it. But Jennifer Hudson's okay because she was in this movie and she has a great voice. And I'm over here like, y'all, dark skinned black people exist. Asian people exist. Here's another one that pisses me off. People from Asia in general, specifically people of Indian-like origin, people from India, do not get the representation they need. Bollywood is bigger than Hollywood, and people don't believe me when I say that. I hope you realize.
It absolutely is.
I've seen Pride and Prejudice like 312 times. You know.
Bollywood churns out movies, too.
Bollywood is so impressive.
Yeah, they.
Damn it.
Well, they also one of the main reasons that Bollywood is able to churn out movies the way they do is because they don't have labor laws like we do on film
that's
sets.
That's true.
So they're able to, but everybody knows within Bollywood they've all seen the little clips of the over the top ridiculous special effects Bollywood films and the lines and lines of people dancing, but they also produce enormous amounts of really high quality dramas as well. And this is something near and dear to my heart. They produce some extremely high quality horror films as well that are and a lot of people are turned off by them, of course, in English speaking countries because they're subtitled, but I have no problems with subtitles. I grew up on watching foreign films and they like some proper quality stuff comes out of Bollywood. And I think it's largely ignored, unfortunately. But they, Bollywood is enormous as far as like the number of films they produce and the number of actors and people working in it.
And even then, Bollywood still is plagued in their own sphere with the same crap that Hollywood is plagued with, which is God forbid you be darker, God forbid you be disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's people want to say that it's like, oh, well, you know, if there were more disabled actors, I want to sit here and be like, shut up. We're everywhere. Y'all just won't give us jobs. So you don't know who we are. It's completely systemic. Like they do it on purpose because the idea of, I guess, film and movies is to remove you from your daily life and give you this ideal idea of what things look like. But unfortunately, the people having these dreams in their head and writing these screenplays are old white men.
So,
and that's what their idea looks like to them.
So when we first, when Mike was first telling me that we were going to get to have you on here, the first person that popped into my head is Jerry Jewell. Do you remember who Jerry Jewell is by chance? Are you old enough?
Sounds familiar.
So when I was a kid, there was this TV show called The Facts of Life. And it was about this all-girls prep school, and Mrs. Garrett was the thing. But Jerry Jewell was a character on there, or an actor. Her name is Jerry Jewell. She was a character on there, and she has cerebral palsy. And she portrayed somebody who has cerebral palsy. And I very clearly remember, like, the very first time that she was on, she was wearing a T-shirt. She goes, I don't have cerebral palsy, I'm drunk. And
I remember this. Yes.
And
oh God.
And I always like at the time, I mean, that was absolutely groundbreaking to have somebody on television who clearly has cerebral palsy and wasn't pretending to be anything. Although her as a stand-up comic, she was often the punchline of her own jokes. And, you know, now, you know, here it is, you know, 40 years later, trying to reconcile whether or not that was a good thing or a bad thing. Later on, she went on to be on Deadwood. I don't know if you guys remember that show either, but I mean, I'm sure, you know, for what the time was, it was amazing, but she was the first person I thought of because to me, that was the first exposure I ever had as like 6, 7, 8 years old as to somebody with any type of disability.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about that is because I had that exposure to her, when my folks got divorced and we moved to Indianapolis, my mom started working for the March of Dimes. And in real life, I got to be around people with different disabilities, including cerebral palsy. And like to me, it was like normal because I had seen people, even if it was on TV, that had it. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't have a question. No. I just wanted to share all of that.
No, I love that. No, and I agree. I get so, I mean, I'll harp on it again. Like the plot point thing really pisses me off a lot of times because it's, I know so many people who are disabled and like that people have this idea about disability that people just are on the government's dime, sitting at home, not contributing, blah, 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 blah. Because capitalism blows and everyone thinks your labor is intrinsically tied to your value in the United States. And that's just bullshit to begin with. But I have so many friends who are like vice presidents of companies and whatever. And like, are you familiar with Crutches and Spice on TikTok?
No,
by any chance?
I am not.
She is the freaking best. Oh God. Okay. So her entire channel, she has cerebral palsy. And she walks with crutches and she has the best takes on everything. Like I've never watched one of her videos and been like, nope, no, she's on it every time. And like, she has even like me, I am a white cisgendered woman, have been like, oh God. And I've had to like reevaluate myself, which I do daily anyway, but like, she makes me like dig deep.
Dude,
I recommend everyone go follow Crutches and Spice right now.
I'll go find her.
My first friend I ever made on the internet back in like 1996, her name is Sarah, and we are still friends today. This was before Facebook, before MySpace, before Classmates.com. We met on an ICQ chat board. That's how old it was.
Oh, my God.
And
wow.
That's the stone age of the internet.
Right? It was. We were literally using stone tablets to communicate back and forth. But I found out shortly after we became friends that she has cerebral palsy. And like for her, the internet became this godsend of her being able to communicate normally, I'm using little air quotes here, you know, with the rest of the world. And, you know, here we are, you know, 25 years, Jesus Christ, God Almighty, it's been a long time, 25 years later. And like, she has, you know, she's now out of college and she works at a, like a text service, dealing with, suicide, stuff. So she's working with those type of people. And on freaking weekends, she's a burlesque performer in her wheelchair. Like, fucking A.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I'm a burlesque performer, too.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what people, that's another, it goes on. I could name probably eight people off the top of my head right now on TikTok. And funny enough, they're all disabled women who are like, hello, I exist in this form that makes you uncomfortable. Crutches and Spice, they're like, her main goal is to educate people in a way that forces them to look at themselves, but also accept what's going on around them currently and feel empowered to change it. But her original job before she started blogging and things like that, she's a marketing specialist. Her favorite thing to do is to pick apart marketing and be like, how could you have better marketed this thing? And seeing it through a lens, she's a black disabled woman. Seeing it through that lens is always such a freaking wake up call. You're like, oh God, everything's broken. Jesus Christ. And it's like, Oh, it's so frustrating because I'll be like, oh, that was an okay ad. And then she'll stop and she'll be like, this was terrible and here's why. It's like, oh, no. I follow women with a Chiari malformation. I follow two women with Chiari malformations, which is when the bottom of your brain just slips into your spinal column because your skull won't hold part of your brain in.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to walk with crutches or they can't walk at all. They have epilepsy because of it. It goes on forever. And to hear that these people are burlesque dancers and they are considered sexy and desirable, and that confronts so many other things on top of that. Like, not only do we hold down jobs, we're competition to able-bodied women. And that scares the shit out of so many people on a level that they weren't expecting.
Yeah,
I've had it happen to my face.
People
are like, oh, are you married? I'm like, no, but I have a kick-ass boyfriend. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, does that make you upset?
Yeah, I love the fact that Sarah is just so openly, blatantly sexual. Like, it's like, you go, like, you... Because it does, it bends that stereotype, and I think we think that God, what was the book that I read when I was a kid about the there's a book about a boy who has cerebral palsy and he's non-communicative and but he's like thinking about sex all the time and it's like I forget what that book is called. But anyhow, like I love that it just pushes these ideas that because you're in a wheelchair or you have a disability that it means you're not normal everywhere else.
Oh yeah, no, it's a big problem, honestly. Like, when anybody has anything quote unquote wrong with them, the idea of any kind of sexuality goes out the window because people all of a sudden write you off as someone they wouldn't be sexual with. So automatically they think that nobody else would either, or they think that it's a fetish. They don't realize that we're whole people. Mm-hmm. Like, we're entire fucking people. A good person that like exemplifies this to a T is Jacqueline Box. You can look her up on Facebook. She runs burlesque classes. She's a burlesque dancer with a wheelchair. And
nice.
She wheels her fucking wheelchair on stage and performs on her wheelchair. And I cannot tell you how many times I've been in the audience watching Jacqueline, and she's still in Baltimore. But I've seen her, oh God, dozens of times now, and where I'll hear some dude in the audience somewhere, and I always go find him and get up in his face and be like, I'm sorry, what the fuck did you just say? So I'll be all of a sudden like, this is a weird boner, and I'm like, oh, fuck you, it's a normal boner, it's okay to admit that you think she's pretty. Like, stop it.
Now
you
go home and masturbate.
Shit.
Sort yourself out. Well, we are, I'm sorry, Billy, we are actually coming up on our 45-minute mark, which is about as long as most of our listeners will tolerate us. So do you have any final thoughts there, Billy, on any hope that you see for the improvement of this, or just more of the same? Is that what you expect?
I think we're coming to a tipping point. I think Gen X did a good job of making themselves available to talk to for older generations. Millennials have done a good job of setting the stage for what's to come. And then Gen Z is just steamrolling everyone because they're just tired.
Mm-hmm.
And once Gen Z gets to be about 35, 40 years old, those values and ideals that they have now, which is that people with disabilities matter, people, you know, who may look different than you, they matter. Marginalized people matter. Indigenous people matter. It will carry over into mainstream. And my hope and goal is that the generation after them, Generation Alpha, which is just kind of being born now, won't have to experience nearly as much bullshit as we have had to. And mind you, we're very privileged to be in a world we are now. It's so much better now than it ever was. And my hope is that it just keeps getting better. Do I see it getting better in the next 10 years? Man, I hope so. I would like to not be a punchline anymore. I would like to just be a person.
People are not
punchlines. And I am privileged in that I have an invisible disability. I hope to God that my friends don't walk down the street in the next 10 years feeling other. And for the love of God, can cities put ramps on fucking stairwells? I'm so sick of this shit. God damn it. I have so many friends in wheelchairs, and I'm like, can't go to that restaurant. There's not a ramp. So, yeah, that's what I hope for. Better movies, no more punchlines, and fucking ramps. Can we get some ramps?
Fair enough.
All right, where can we find you at online?
TikTok is the best way to get a hold of me and hang out with me. So it's at BillyBillyB on TikTok.
And that's B-I-L-L-I-E, is that correct?
Yep, it's B-I-L-L-I-E, B-I-L-L-I-E-B.
That sounds like a song from kindergarten.
Yeah, you can hang out with me.
B-I-L-L-I-E.
And I also have a Patreon, and I do cover more than just that. I cover Pyrex and history and industrialization in the American age between 1880 and 1980. So it's a mixed bag. Come hang out.
It's a fun mixed bag at that. Greg?
Yes.
Where can we find you on the internet?
On the TikToks, I'm What I'm Making, and on the Instagrams, it's Props with Greg, Greg with two G's at the end.
Well, for me, it's always pretty easy because everything is at Props to History, and the Prop History Podcast, of course, can be found at Prop History Podcast on Instagram. We are once again sponsored by Prop Store, where you can find all of your prop related Afirma from the film industry at propstore.com or propstore.uk. And here, coming soon, we will be having some very in-depth coverage of their very, very big auction that they have coming that has some very exciting things. I know we didn't talk much about props in this episode, but let's be honest, we never really do.
That's true.
This has been the Prop History Podcast.
Bye.